Give me one of them chicken fingers.
Welcome to the Six Demon Bag Podcast, where we pull random topics related to writing, comics, movies, all that kind of thing.
This is Ed. I'm the author of 3 1/2 children, 12 novels, 12 unproduced screenplays, and all your nightmares.
I'm Jeff. I write science fiction and horror.
This is Drew, gaming aficionado, anime critic, and political addict.
This is Ryan, jack of all trades, master of most.
Welcome back to the newest episode of the Six Demon Bag.
Buenos dias, shitheads. Message in a bottle, pee blocker.
I have a dog. I've been walking this dog in different neighborhoods for about 13 odd years. So we moved to a new neighborhood about 2 years ago. We were walking down the street and this guy came out and scared me off. He's like, "Don't walk your dog here. I don't want your dog making any mess in my yard." And it's that California yard. It's like the patch of grass on the sidewalk. Like sometimes there's a sidewalk, sometimes it's grass. It's not.
Oh, that wasn't his
like
grass.
Right on the property.
That's public grass.
It's kind of public grass. And he's like, "We don't want that here." And I was, and so I showed him my big thing of doggy bags. I'm like, "I pick up after my dog." He's like, "It doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't want it here." And I'm like, okay then. And then a week later, I'm walking the dog by and he's just like sitting over his fence, like Wilson from Home Alone, giving me the stink eye. And I'm just like sending mental commands to my dog, like, please.
Wilson
don't.
From Home Improvement.
Oh, yeah.
How did I not catch that, of all people?
I was waiting for you to when you didn't. Jeez. I felt the need to speak up.
And my dog, of course, can, like, sense the worst timing. And so she stops and pops a squat. And she's just peeing. And the guy's like, "Hey, I thought I told you. I don't want your dog on my block making messes up and down here." I felt attacked. And I felt the need to respond to this guy every time he mouths off to me. And I'm like, "You don't own the whole block," because it wasn't even in front of his place.
And my
wife pulled me away. She's like, "He's obviously crazy. Don't talk to him." I'm like, "Well, he lives here and we live here. And does this mean we can't just walk down the street?" Which is essentially what it means. We've taken to avoiding that street. And now my dog is like, "Let me back on that block. I've got to remark my territory."
Was Penny looking him in the eyes as she shat on the ground?
Yeah, she gave him a little wink as she peed.
This one's for you.
And on a related note, I was walking the dog. Dog pooped. I picked it up. Poo didn't even have a chance to like cool off. I'm just right there with the bag.
Side note, this is why I don't have a dog.
Picked it up. I tossed it in a trash can. It was like trash day. People had their trash cans on the curb. And so, thinking I'm being the very model of a responsible dog owner, bag up the poop, put it in the trash can. I didn't realize there was a woman who was camped out in her car. She jumped out of the car and started screaming at me. And she wouldn't stop yelling at me until I reached into the trash can and pulled out the poop. And it's like, how little control do you have over your own life that your greatest thrill is mastery of your own garbage can that's on the curb? It's hard to be a dog owner in my neighborhood, especially because people let their pit bulls run off leash. But
hypocrites.
In my experience, though, homeowners are freaking nuts.
Well, they're probably not even homeowners. Right. My thing is that
whatever, they rent their house. Like when I stop to, wait for Nolly to come out of school and stuff, the kids like to get out of the van and like run around and everything, and because we don't have grass by us, so they run on the, like, I'm always like, stay on the public grass, don't touch anybody's lawn, don't pick up a stick, even don't do anything, because people are freaking nuts and I don't want to get in a fight. So
and we know Ed will get in a fight.
And I will, yeah, get in a fight. I thought that was going to lead to an actual story.
No, nothing happened, but I don't want anything to happen. I'm just like, people, I explained to them, these people are insane. They own this stuff and they think they're crazy. So just don't give them an opportunity.
Yeah. So I guess that's my message in a bottle, yep, which is chill the fuck out.
Chill out. I did drop Jerry off at they had closed the roads by her work, so I had to kind of pull into a driveway the next road over. And like, I hate it when people block my driveway with their cars, but usually they're like leaving their cars or like parking in my actual parking spot and going away. This one, she was just getting out of the car and some lady came out and was like, don't you park in my driveway. And I was like, oh my God, the roads, yeah, are closed. I have nowhere else to drop her off. Should I just let her out in the middle of the street? I'm not getting out of my car. She was like, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, same deal.
I think people double down on their mistakes too. Like, you yeah, probably thought you were going to leave your car there.
Sure. Yeah.
And just went irate, went right to 60, but then can't back down.
Right.
Because totally, they are like the feral dogs in their own yards. They just start barking and can't stop barking.
So I thought this topic was going to be about people who block your pee, like when I'm at the urinal and nobody's around and there's like 27 urinals like at the Dodger Stadium and I'm like, ah, peace. And then before I can start, someone comes and goes to the urinal right beside me, and then I can't go. But because I'm embarrassed, I like pretend like I'm going and then flush the toilet so they don't realize that I had stage fright and couldn't pee and that they blocked it, and then I just zip up and walk away. I thought it was going to be like that.
So what's your message in a bottle to those people?
Get away from me.
I just go right on their legs and they leave.
It says, Ryan, the story about the leech. And leech is spelled incorrectly.
You know what? I knew I was spelling it incorrectly. It's, when you mentioned this recently, after all the years I've known you, I was shocked. And I felt like it should be preserved for prosperity. Posterity?
Posterity.
Posterity's mm-hmm. prosperity.
So I don't remember why this came up. We were talking about leeches, or we were talking about Stand By Me or something. And there's the famous scene where Will Wheaton's character gets a leech on his penis. I had to pipe up and for whatever we were talking about and say, oh, I had a leech on my penis once.
What the fuck? Really?
And Jeff really noted it down.
I literally wrote it in my phone and I was like, speech.
Before I finished saying the words.
Was it a part of some kind of medical treatment or something?
Yeah, sometimes.
They taking some swelling down?
Did you?
I was like, no, it's always like that, baby.
Did you submit to medical treatment at like the Ren Fair or something?
No, my grandfather took us fishing. Me and my cousin. We used to spend weeks during the summer with him.
Wait, is this a sad story?
No, it's not a sad story.
Okay. Although, I want to hear about your grandfather.
Although his method of fishing may differ from yours.
You got to dangle that worm out there. You know what I'm saying?
Ryan's a masturbator, though.
We went fishing, and then we finished up. We were out in a boat, and then we were packing the boat up, and me and my cousin put on our swimsuits or possibly underpants. Don't know. Don't remember. And we jumped into the Merrimack River in New Hampshire. And when we came out, we were changing out of our wet clothes. So I was standing in the bed of my grandfather's truck, and he was out at the front of the truck somewhere. And I took off my swimsuit, and sure enough, I had a leech on my dick. But it wasn't like a mega leech like in Stand By Me. It was just a tiny little leech.
Well, it was a tiny little dick, to be.
But it was still good for a 7-year-old. inch per year. I'm sure that this is not PC to say, but I definitely screamed like a girl, very high pitched, and I'm sure my grandfather came running.
Where was it on your dick? Was it on the end or on the?
Just the tip.
It was on the non-tip part. It was on the shaft.
Okay.
This is awful. But I don't know, I was terrified because there was a leech sucking blood out. So my grandpa just laughed and pulled it off. Pulled the leech off.
Oh, okay.
Pulled the leech off. And he got a real kick out of it. And when my parents came to pick me up a few days later, he laughingly told them the story of my embarrassment.
Ryan, that leech is here. And it's time for you to forgive him.
He's got something to say to you.
Leech, I'd like you to meet your son.
Agave Ripe Comic Book.
Ed, Augie Ripped Comic Book.
Oh,
will you tell the story?
I wanted to hear about Agave Ripe Comic Book.
Some kind of hippie comic book? Well, years and years and years ago, before they had Marvel movies, I went to a Pasadena comic book convention. And it was ostensibly to see Rob Zombie because my eldest son, Jonathan, was a big Rob Zombie fan. He was there with his wife, Sherry Moon. It was real easy to see him because this is back in that weird time when comic books were still nerdy and it wasn't crowded up the gills to get in and all that kind of stuff. And we waited maybe like 10 minutes for Rob Zombie. I pitched a script to him while I was talking to him.
What?
I mean, yeah, he was very easy to talk to, and it was really cool. And Jonathan took a picture with him. And
yeah, always very approachable, very cool.
Mm.
What script did you pitch him?
As an exercise, I wrote a adaptation of White Zombie, the original White Zombie, where I changed a whole bunch of stuff up and everything. And he was like, yeah, send it by my office and everything. And Stan Lee was there as well. And this is, again, way before they ever thought about making movies. There were movies of comics, but it was like, you know, David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury or something, you know, on TV. And, the Hulk and Thor movies were on TV and stuff. And that was all there was. And he was real approachable. We waited maybe 15 minutes in line.
For Stan Lee, yeah.
This is now, a couple years before he died, if you wanted to get Stan Lee's autograph, you were in line all day, and they probably cut you off by the time got there.
And it probably cost you.
And too. It was like $100, yeah. Again, I got to sit there and talk to him for a minute, and I went to take a picture with him, and my wife had this camera that did it was just point and click, but it did a double flash. And so I remember I got next to Stan Lee, down on one knee, and we were smiling at the camera, and click, click, and I looked away, and it's just my profile and Stan Lee looking up and grinning and everything, and he's like, well, I hope it turned out for you, and all this. So whatever. So anyway, I got him to sign my Marvel Masterworks Amazing Fantasy number one Spider-Man. So it's like the first collected issues of Spider-Man, and he like wrote Excelsior in there and signed his name and all that. And a couple years ago, I'm trying to get my son to read more, my youngest son, Augie. And one of the things, he's real into Spider-Man. He loves Spider-Man, the movies and all that. So I brought out this Marvel Masterworks, and I was like, Augie, be really careful with this, and I'll let you read it and everything. This is the first, Spider-Man comic and everything. And he was like, okay. So he sat there, and not 5 minutes into it, he's got it on his stomach, and he's laying on his back, and he rips the middle page, like, right in half. And, the little vein pops out on the side of your head and everything, and your eyes start to roll up, and you get the little shake, and then you just kind of take a breath and let it pass out into the universe. And, whatever he was reading, and the point was, it was an awesome comic, and he was getting something out of it, and, that's what I feel like Stan Lee would have wanted anyway. Like, Stan Lee wouldn't want me to snatch this comic book from my kid's hand and scream at him, so, what are you going to do? It's not like I was planning to sell it or anything anyway, but...
But that's actually the literal translation of Excelsior, is snatch the comic book away and beat your child with it.
Excelsior!
Excelsior! He's been telling us for years!
Yeah. So it was kind of sad, but it was a moment when I felt the fanaticism of fandom for just an instant. How unreasoning and blinding it can be, but it quickly passed.
Once, when I was a teenager, I worked in a comic book store.
Comic book stores usually have pretty cool names. What was the name of this store?
Do you actually know the name of the store?
No.
Are you setting me up? It was the comic store.
Oh.
What a letdown. So lame. Was it a black and white sign? Did it have like Sally Forth on it or something?
It was way before the resurgence of comic popularity, so I don't think it's even there anymore. But my boss like cleaned out his personal archives one day, and so there on the wall, like up high in bags, he had hung all the like really good stuff. So I got like an Iron Man number 2 in really bad condition, but still cool. And then one day I went into work and there was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1 first printing. And I was like, so I mean, so many of my paychecks at that job were just immediately blown on just junk. But so I bought it. I bought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1 first printing. And like an idiot, I read it because I had never read it before. And I was very careful. I didn't damage or anything, but I'm sure I touched it with my bare fingers. And you
if
know,
you were
I,
half
I
as
opened...
greasy then as you are now, that
I'm telling you,
destroyed.
Yeah, it is. And then I put it in a file cabinet, but it's an oversized comic book, so the back kind of bent over the other issues a little bit. And I tried to flip it so it would kind of iron back out, but I think the damage is done. And I don't want to send it to the CGC or whatever because
those
I don't want to send
anyway.
It away. You have to mail it away.
It doesn't. Yeah. Matter. No, I once had a long box of comic books during the speculation bubble of comic book collection where all the companies were pumping out different number ones and variant
foil
covers and
covers.
Foil covers and
yes, the 90s.
Just banking on people's idiocy. And I would look at the comic book price guide and I was like, I've got a couple $1,000 worth of comic books here. And so I finally took it in, hauled my long box in of my best comics to a store. And they're like, man, I'll give you a nickel for this and a nickel for that. And I was like, but in the book, it says this is worth $100. And like he just pointed to a box full of X-Men giant size number ones or whatever.
Well, the only difference is this is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1 first printing, of which there were only 3,000 printed.
Do you still have it?
Oh, I still have it. And I won't tell you where, dear listener.
Is that your most valuable comic, you think, that you
have? Oh, it's by far my most valuable comic, yeah.
I don't know. I think I have the first appearance of Moon Knight is probably the most valuable thing I have. Which I think is going to go up once that show comes out.
Time's going to tell on Moon Knight.
I'm waiting on that Moon Knight, man. That full run of Werewolf by Night. That's going to pay off in spades. No, my most valuable one to me, though, is probably the one that I got when we went to San Diego that one time. And Kazuo Koike was there. And I got him to sign my Lone Wolf and Cub number 1. Remember? Character.
Yeah.
All that was awesome.
Mine's a bit of a dual threat because it's the most valuable monetarily and most valuable
to you.
To
yeah,
me.
I know.
I would do the whole cardboard backing thing with my Battle Chasers, and I was heavy into Gen 13, so I would try to get the Gen 13 Zine. I got the Gen 13 crossover with Pit, and I just collected pretty much every Gen 13 I could find. I think I even have a Gen 13 number 1, but I don't have the foil cover. And then I have the reboot from when Wildstorm got purchased by DC. One thing I really tried to find to complete my set, because all three together were really valuable, but if you were missing one, it wasn't, was Emerald Twilight. I was able to get a mint condition Emerald Twilight 1 and 2, but I couldn't find Emerald Twilight 3.
Do you ever look at Comic-Con?
I've looked at Comic-Con a few times, but the thing is, last time I was seriously collecting comic books was in the 90s, and every time I go to Comic-Con, I forget what I was doing in the 90s, and then when we're in the
like
car...
a lot
cocaine.
Of yeah, and then when we're in the car driving home, I'm like, damn it, I should have looked for that.
I keep a list in my phone of comics I'm trying to collect.
I got a little list, mostly Gru the Wanderers.
It may be too late for us to find that comic at Comic-Con, considering all the comics
all the comic
suppliers are backing
are going,
out.
Yeah.
YouTube shame. What video recommendations show up in your YouTube timeline that shame you? For a long time, YouTube was trying to get me to watch, like, pimple popping videos or something. And I was like, is this who you think I am, YouTube? Like, what in
you
my
did it at some point.
History?
I'm getting a lot of psychological, like, therapy videos right now.
I think you should watch those videos.
Well, my kids watch YouTube on the smart TV. They watch, like, Noli watches
their smart
TV. You know, Wolfie Chew and all these YouTubers and stuff, and
it just completely destroys
it destroys my algorithm. Yeah, all kinds of stuff come at me. I don't know what it is.
I'm getting dust sci-fi now. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
High road or bust?
Oh, I just wrote in this one. So I tend to, and I don't know if you guys are like this, but I tend to high road people to a terrible degree, especially in the parking garage.
What does that mean?
So, you know, when you take the high road, it's like you're taking the moral high ground.
Yeah.
So the other day I was, so I go to this one parking garage every week to go to my language class, and it's really, the lanes are pretty narrow, but everyone who's oncoming always cuts the lanes, so I have to, like, hard brake if someone's coming, because they're basically in my lane. And so the other day, I high-roaded someone, and but I, because I have this, like, anger at them for cutting, I will stick to my lane as hard as I possibly can. So the other day, someone cut in a lane, and I high-roaded them so bad that I hit the cone that was guarding the other side.
So do you mean to say that you're high-roading them because you refuse to resort to their behavior, or that you do the same mistakes we all do when driving, but you're blaming other people for them?
It can be that. In this case, specifically, following, like, staying inside the lines so hard, metaphorically and literally, that you end up overcompensating and fucking up in some other way. So, like, on the right side of me, there was a road cone blocking a cement pylon, and I hit the road cone because I was trying to stay in my lane so hard because I had a moral obligation to not cut into the other lane while taking the turn in the parking garage.
Maybe you should watch those YouTube recommended videos.
Yeah, I need to watch
some psychological help.
Since they changed my hours at work and I've been going in at a later hour instead of 6 in the morning, I'm noticing that there are a lot of people who just don't seem to give a damn about traffic laws. You see a lot of people driving on the wrong side of the street because they're just tired of waiting for traffic to move.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of times when I've almost witnessed head-on collisions because someone is on the wrong side of the street and someone else is getting into the left turn lane, and the person on the wrong side of the street acts like the person that has the right of way is somehow in the wrong.
Sure.
And it's like, wow, so this is why we're starting to see more and more people with cameras on their dash.
One thing I read a while ago that was kind of interesting in terms of self-driving cars is that they tried to program these self-driving cars to follow every single traffic rule, and people hated it. And it turns out that if everyone drove and obeyed every rule, no one would get anywhere, because you wouldn't use any of the capacity of the streets. It's only by being flexible and taking some of these shortcuts and occasionally dipping in and out of lanes and backing up and things like that, going a little too fast, using the shoulder. That's the only way we can get cars through our congested streets in LA.
I would say yes and no. People probably hated it because the cars were going the speed limit, and when people go the speed limit, it becomes infuriating.
Well,
because everyone's used to going 5 to 10. But if every car went the speed limit, it wouldn't be more congested. It would be clean.
A lot of times when I break the rules, it's because I feel a little bit of peer pressure, where instead of stopping at the stop sign for like a full 2 seconds, I'll kind of do a slow rolling.
I'm way susceptible to peer pressure until I'm high roading.
I like the peer pressure where someone's like, just drive into oncoming traffic. Yeah. Just kill yourself. What are you waiting for? And I'm like,
kill yourself.
There's no amount of honking that's going to make me drive into that truck.
Yeah.
Jeff versus the flies. And flies is spelled correctly.
Yay. Good job, Jeff.
So as you know, fair listener, there was a lesson light in time. I was not above harming insects. You might think that I just focused all my ire on spiders, but this is a story about flies. Equal opportunity destroyer. my family would go down to the Eastern Shore, and these were beach houses. You're in and out all day, screen porches, kind of old wooden houses with lots of gaps in the doors and things like that. Summertime, flies are coming in, whatever. Every house we would rent would have ample fly swatters in every room. And it was just a thing. You just walked around with fly swatters and you just hit the flies. And in Delaware, they grow them big. These big, nasty ass horse flies, like an inch long.
With bane of pool days big, everywhere.
Big, green, bright green eyes, and that would bite really hard. One year we were down there and the wind shifted. It was an offshore breeze. So the wind came from across the state of Delaware, across the swampy landmass, onto the beaches. And with it came these giant, thick, black clouds of swarming, biting flies. And
many were skeletonized that summer.
It was intense. There was this one day where we brought all of our chairs and tables and coolers and umbrellas down to the beach and our food and our drinks. And we, you know, we were set up just for a nice casual day of, you know, dipping in the water, reading books, throwing a frisbee. You know, we were going to be down there for hours. And when the flies hit the beach, it was so bad that people ran into the water and stayed. The people on the beach were stuck in the water because the flies were biting so badly. And eventually, people just broke off in groups and ran across the beach back to their houses and shut their windows and doors and just hid inside. Mm-hmm. This was like apocalyptic flies. I was like 12 or 13. I was cooped up inside on my summer vacation. We're at the beach and we can't enjoy it because of these stupid flies. I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going down to the beach and I'm getting our stuff and I'm bringing it back. And my family was like, all right, whatever. So I formed a plan.
One less mouth to feed.
So, or a lot of tiny mouths to feed. So I put on my shoes and socks, and then I put on two layers of socks and shoes. I put on two or three pairs of sweatpants. I put on multiple shirts and sweatshirts, and I put the hood up over my face and I cinched it tight. And then I had a fly swatter in each hand. And I waddled down to the beach like a warrior in ill-fitting armor that was like too heavy. And I was the only one on the beach, and the whole beach was abandoned. And people had just left all their coolers and blankets and stuff there. And when I got there, the flies just descended upon me and they were just clinging to me, trying to bite through all the layers. And so I was like, ha, ha, ha. Oh, I had a towel wrapped around my face too. And so I was laughing and I'm swatting the flies, and every strike of the fly swatter would hit like 5 or 7 flies. And as soon as I would peel the fly swatter away, 5 more flies would land and take their place. Mm-hmm. So I was just hitting myself all over, and the flies were just crawling all over, biting, trying to find a chink in my armor. Mm-hmm. And so I dipped down, I put my arm through a couple of the beach chairs, and I grab a couple bags and towels, and I'm walking, and I'm hitting myself, and then my towel starts to work its way loose, and then the flies are getting in, and then somehow they're finding little like parts by my elbow, and they start biting my back, and I'm hitting myself, and I eventually got home, and I got all bit up, but man, that was one of the craziest experiences I had down at the beach.
Those things are horrific, man. It feels like a chipmunk biting you.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like a mosquito.
Do you know what it feels like to have a chipmunk bite you?
I know what it feels like to have horse flies bite you. We went rafting on, I don't know, some river in Michigan. No, Wisconsin. And holy crap, yeah. We got a couple horse flies. And I would just, we would get out of the raft and like just go down to our, you know, eyes and just pull the raft along.
Yeah, and then they just bite you on the head.
Yeah, well, they get you in the face, but what are you going to do?
On a horsefly related note, when we were making Ed's movie, Meaner Than Hill.
Good old Meaner Than Hill.
Meaner Than Hell. We were in Ballarat, the deserted ghost town of Ballarat, and I was getting bitten by horseflies, and this was many years into my Buddhist, like, don't harm insects, but these horseflies started biting, and I was like, fuck you!
Yeah.
And I'm slapping at these horseflies, and I had just met Thomas Cernkovich, and I was like, oh, man, these horseflies, they really bite hard. He's like, meh, I've been bit by a tiger before. And I was like, wow. This guy, Cernkovich, is the real deal. Yeah.
First thing I had to do was teach the tigers not to kill me.
I did try to save the life of a mosquito once, and it led to the only car accident I've ever actually caused.
What?
The only car accident I've ever caused, not the only car accident I've ever been in.
Tell us the story, man.
That's a story for another time.
Oh, come on. No.
We were on our way to school, and there was a mosquito in the car, and I tried to shoo it out the window for some reason. I didn't just, A, ignore it, or B, smash it. And at one point I said, oh, I better not kill us over a mosquito. And then I immediately went right back to trying to shoo the mosquito out the window. And then I heard my sister go, look out! And bam, I rear-ended another student.
You high-roaded yourself.
I destroyed that car. I destroyed my car. I destroyed her car.
Really?
And my poor sister went to school, and I was so traumatized that I went home. She probably should have stayed home also.
Jesus.
But I was like pretty stoic, and I went over and I apologized to the girl. My mom actually was on her way to her job, and she drove by, so she witnessed the like scene of the accident. So she stopped, and I was like, I was trying to get a mosquito out of the car. And she was like, don't you say that to anybody. And
sorry, Mama Drossi.
But for the most part, I held it together. And then as soon as I got home, I broke down crying.
Jeez.
Because it was so horrible. Like, I'm thank God, like, we had our seatbelts on and stuff. Because I did frame damage to the front of my car. And my dad fixed it because he was a mechanic. But the other girl's car was totaled. And she got a brand new car out of the deal. So...
Jesus.
But I felt like every time I see her in school, because we had a really small community or a really small student body, so I just see her every time I went to Latin class, and I just felt awful. It was so stupid.
Did the mosquito live?
Probably. He probably sucked my blood later that day.
Yeah, he probably sucked the blood of the cop that stopped to take the thing, and the cop just smashed it immediately.
Yeah. And it wasn't even something genuinely scary like a bee or something. Like if a bee gets in your car, I can kind of see freaking out and crashing. But not a mosquito. Jeez Louise.
All right, Drew, reach into that bag. Pull us out a good 2020 topic.
Whose asshole is this? Who's the asshole?
So this is a topic called Who's the Asshole?
Oh, yeah, is it? I got that.
And I'm gonna present a scenario to you. So I was at the park.
You're the asshole. Let's just
skip to the next one. Ryan's locking in his vote early. May I present it to Ed and Drew? I'm at the park. There's a little kid, like 5 years old.
You're the asshole.
And he's on a basketball court whipping this car around. And he's just chucking it as hard and as far as he can. On the other end of the basketball court, there's a guy who's practicing. He's running, cutting, turning, really like impressive basketball skills. And every time this kid throws this car, he almost trips on it. Now there's a park that's about, conservatively I'd say, 50 to 70 times the size of this basketball court where this kid could be playing.
You can't roll a car on grass.
There's many, many, many other areas where he could be playing with this car. But he just insists on throwing this car under this guy who's just working on his basketball skills.
Yeah.
And constantly almost rolling his ankle or eating it and dying on this basketball court. And so eventually I was like, hey, kid, could you maybe throw the car that away?
But the basketball guy said nothing.
Basketball guy said nothing. He was focused. And I mean, I just kept watching with my heart in my throat as he nearly stepped on this car like 10 times.
Maybe that was part of his practice.
maybe. The kid was like, maybe it was.
It was like a Rocky thing. The kid was the chicken. The car was the chicken.
I don't know.
I don't know.
We all know my position on really annoying little kids, but...
Well, I ask you, know, if who's the asshole guy, in the situation?
If basketball guy wasn't saying anything, then keep your nose out of it.
I'm kind of with Ryan. I would be like, it's up to basketball guy.
Yeah, man.
Like, basketball guy's a grown man. If he's like, damn, kid! Stop throwing that fucking car under me.
Then you kick the kid in the face.
Yeah, then you go, then you're like, yeah,
no, but
kid.
Then wouldn't he be the asshole if he said, damn kid, stop throwing that car at me?
Not if it's truly interfering with him.
The kid is amoral. He doesn't know what's right or what's wrong, but he's clearly on a basketball court messing with the basketball player unintentionally. The basketball player is just doing what he's supposed to do. The one place he can practice.
Did an irate... What did the kid do then? Did an irate parent
The kid was... Doesn't... I don't even know if he's...
Nonplussed.
Yeah, I don't even know if he heard me or understood me. He was just having fun playing with his car. Mm. And the parent... I have no idea where the parent was. Like, I'm the type of person that if I'm in a grocery store and I see some smashed fruit or, like, some trash on the ground and I think someone's going to slip, like... I get nervous until I go over and pick it up. Like, I don't want someone else to slip and fall.
I stopped my car when I was home for Indiana because we drove past a wardrobe sitting in the middle of the nighted highway. And I drove past it, and I stopped, and I was like, I can't pass that. So I went in reverse. And I got out of the car, and I pulled it off to the side of the road. And a cop stopped at the same time.
You could have gotten hit by a car.
No, it was a country road. There wasn't that. This is how it is in Indiana, just blackness. And then all of a sudden, the headlights, from the edge of the headlights, a wardrobe forms, you know?
Yeah, now,
you should have gone into the wardrobe.
And you hate to hear it, but that was like your one chance to escape into a magical realm.
I did hear Mr. Tumnus like yelling as I shoved it up.
Come this
side.
Way, I don't have a shirt on.
Pooh's Corner.
I have something that I thought of. I'm glad we got a Pooh's Corner. But it's... The fact that on more than one occasion, when I've been dating someone early in the relationship, if I've slept over at their house, I haven't wanted to use the bathroom the next morning because it was embarrassing, and then inevitably we'd go out somewhere on the town to like have breakfast or go, you know, to a store or something, and then it's like I'm really visibly uncomfortable, and then the date thinks... It's because I'm not having a good time or whatever, but really it's just because I have to poo. And it's gotten me in trouble on more than one occasion. So, I'm a slave to my bowels.
We're all a slave to your bowels.
If I could direct your attention to the psychological help videos in your YouTube recommendations, I think that would
You know, if there's no
help.
Fan in there and there's no... It's window. A joke in more than one movie.
Got to the point where as I get older, I just want to take a shower after I go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
We would like you to take a shower like, after
not,
as well.
Or anytime.
Just, it's not, toilet paper just doesn't do the job anymore, you know? Like, I gotta go take a shower.
We need some bidets in this country.
We do need bidets. Did I ever tell you the story about how my girlfriend and I at the time in Chicago went to a party in like a kind of highfalutin loft and this guy had a bidet in his bathroom? And
doesn't ring a bell.
Okay, so it was a party, and
it's always a party with a bidet.
He had a bidet in the bath. He had a big, nice, spacious marble bathroom with a bidet and all this. And about midway through the party, you know, he comes out and cuts the music off and is like, "Who took a shit in the fucking bidet?" Because
low class.
Somebody thought it was a toilet.
Was it you?
And no, it was not me because somebody explained to me what it was before I drank out of it. No. But, you know, obviously there's no place for it to go. It's like a little sink, you know, so it's not going to go anywhere.
The one time I used a bidet, I had the opportunity to stay in a fancy hotel or something. I don't remember where, but I was just sitting on a toilet, and I saw a lot of controls, and I was like, oh, this is one of those bidets. Probably sound like such a savage to our European listeners. Zimbabwe, bear with me. I mean, Mozambique, bear with me. Sorry, Zimbabwe.
We love also.
So I was like, this is one of those bidets. I think I'm going to use this thing. And I was like, I don't know how any of this works. And I stood up and turned around, and a jet of water just hit me right in the face. And I was like, yep, that's about what I expected the first encounter with the bidet.
You don't know how to use the three seashells?
Don't know how to use the three seashells.
I just didn't understand why there was a toilet with a bidet next to it. That doesn't make sense to me. It's like, you gotta, what do you, shuffle over with your pants around your ankles and plunk yourself in front of this thing? How does it work?
I don't know what kind of parties you were getting into, man.
Maybe we need to look up a YouTube video.
Yeah. No. I have yet to know the sweet sensation of a bidet on my buttocks. Or on my face.
Find us at sixdemonbagpodcast.com, sixdemonbagpodcast@gmail.com, Facebook and Instagram, and on Twitter at Six Demon Podcast. Special thanks to Colleen Green for the use of her song, Why Do You Call Me, off the Green One album.
This is Ed. If you want to find more about me, you can look up my blog, emertilek.wordpress.com, Delirium Tremens, or Facebook. I'm there all the time.
This is Jeff. You can find more at Carter Wrote It on Facebook and Twitter.
This is Drew. You can find me on Twitter at GenFactor.
You can find me, Ryan, on YouTube at 20th Century RG with the number 20.
Give me that barbecue sauce.